In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies. It is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Everytown Podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Everytown Podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, the secret Pentagon's UFO study recently uncovered by the New York Times. A leading Canadian ufologist discusses the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program.
They got reports from all of these Navy pilots of these craft coming into the airspace and investigating the reports of these craft coming and going, and not just flying in the airspace, but going down into water. Submersing into water, frothing foam in the seas, developing, you know, waves and currents of salt water, and so these pilots are just, you know, they're reporting these things and they don't know. I mean, all they're doing is reporting what they're seeing.
This podcast is brought to you by International Star Registry. Choosing a gift for someone special can be a daunting task. Whether it's a birthday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, anniversary, or any other big day, you want a gift that's unique and perfect for that person who already has everything. International Star Registry can help. They've been providing unique gift ideas for over 25 years. International Star Registry lets you name an actual star in the sky after your special someone. Name a star after someone you care about and they'll remember it forever and never forget your thoughtfulness. The address is getarealstar.com. Getarealstar.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serres. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Well, it's Friday already. We are heading into spring. I thought the days are supposed to be getting longer, not shorter. Sometimes I feel like we're living at the speed of light. You know what I mean? Everything flies by so quickly, so much happening in the world. There's barely enough time to digest anything. Every day, it seems, some life-changing news story breaks, and then we go about our business as if it never happened. We're on to the next story. Take, for example, this secret Pentagon UFO study story that broke last December. It was a huge story, basically an admission by a Pentagon official that the U.S. Defense Department is concerned about and is studying UFOs and assessing their possible threat to U.S. national security. I mean, think about that. But then since December, it's completely fallen off the radar, at least as far as the New York Times and the mainstream media goes. No real follow-up to a paradigm-busting story. How does that happen? Well, as I say, back in mid-December 2017, the New York Times ran this story that many in the UFO community considered an official disclosure of the UFO ET reality. The piece described a secret UFO study being run out of the fifth floor of the Pentagon's C-Ring by military intelligence official Luis Elizondo. The Defense Department has never before acknowledged the existence of such a program, which it says it shut down in 2012. But its backers say that while the Pentagon ended funding for the effort at that time, the program remains in existence. For the past 5 years, they say, officials with the program have continued to investigate episodes brought to them by service members, while also carrying out their own Defense Department duties. The shadowy program, parts of it remain classified, began in 2007, and initially it was largely funded at the request of former Senator Harry Reid, the Nevada Democrat, who was a Senate Majority Leader at the time, who has had a long-time interest in space phenomena. Most of the money went to an aerospace research company run by billionaire entrepreneur and longtime friend of Senator Reid's, Robert Bigelow, who's currently working with NASA to produce expandable craft for humans to use in space. On CBS's 60 Minutes back last May, Mr. Bigelow said he was absolutely convinced, quote, end quote, that aliens exist and that UFOs have visited Earth. Here to discuss is one of Canada's leading ufologists, Victor Vigiani, a retired school principal from Toronto, Canada. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology and psychology and a master's in educational administration and curriculum development. Victor's research and analysis of anomalous aerial phenomenon spans over 30 years. His experience involves UFO sightings, report investigation, counseling work with individuals reporting anomalous experiences, presentations, and journalism in the field of ET disclosure issues. He is the executive director of Zealand Communications. Victor Vigiani, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm just fine, Richard, and it's just great to be with you. Thanks a lot for this opportunity to chat.
For those who don't know of the Terrestrial Radio Show, you have been a longtime friend of the Conspiracy Show, but this is your first time aboard the new podcast, so welcome.
It's just great. I'm actually just enamored by the opportunity of this podcast, Richard. It's a really, really good gig.
Well, we have not had a chance. I haven't had a chance really to address the secret UFO Pentagon study on the podcast. So I thought, who better to do it than with you, one of the deans of ufology in Canada. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it, but just sort of set the table for those who, I guess, have been under a rock since December when the story broke in the New York Times. Just fill people in on how this story broke, the secret Pentagon UFO study.
Yeah, it's really kind of, It's a very provocative situation, Richard. It's just not something that in any way, shape, or form that we can minimize, because the Pentagon is really backing this entire story. That's the bottom line, irrespective of what we talk about, you know, during the next, 30, 35 minutes, whatever. People have to understand, your listeners really have to know that the Pentagon has acknowledged all of this information, and it's a very circuitous route around just about everything that people really want to know about the UFO ET issue. And I underline the word UFO in one way, but I also transcribe it into the ET issue, because a lot of the stuff and some of the people that are sort of managing the output of this journalistically, and the number one would be Leslie Kane, moving towards this whole extraterrestrial understanding of what these UFOs might be all about. And so when the New York Times published this, their first statement, the article was written by Helena Cooper and Leslie Kane and a fellow named by the name of Ralph Blumenthal.
Yeah, longtime New York Times staff writer.
Exactly. So, I mean, you have to figure that these three people get together and sit down with Leslie Kane, who's probably the most definitive and I guess responsible journalist within this whole field, because her book went to number 29 on the New York Times bestseller list. So what they did was they wrote about this whole UFO program that came out of the Pentagon, and what they did was they described the program as the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, backed by the Pentagon. And it was, you got to know that there's $600 billion. That's just more than you and I make in a week, Richard.
Yeah, a little bit more.
Yeah, that kind of budget. You know, the program was given $22 million, and that's a pittance in this whole, you know, it's hard to find money. But they found out that this money was in fact black budget money. And they gave this money to a group of people within the Pentagon to investigate the threat or the possible threats of these unacknowledged aerial phenomenon, UAP, that are, you know, presenting problems for the United States Air Force on multiple fronts, both, you know, within the continental United States and in the Middle East and around the world. So they were tasked with the investigation of looking at, do these things first of all provide a threat to the United States, which that's always sort of like a canned thing that they do, and just what in fact are these things. So they went through a program from 2007 to 2012, and this budget was allocated through the I guess the pressure that a senator named Harry Reid, in conjunction with Robert Bigelow, the magnate, you know, the billionaire magnate within the space program.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I had it a page open on this story, and the video went off, the embedded video in the story. Sorry about that. Hang on.
Okay. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, start again. All right. So, yes, Robert, and Robert Bigelow, who has been, you know, as you say, one of the major movers and shakers in these private space programs.
Exactly. Yeah. So with Senator Harry Reid, these two kind of got together, and what the dynamic was there, Richard, I really don't know. But the fact of the matter is that somehow Harry Reid and another senator, Ted Stevens, got $22 million to fund this program to investigate the whole UFO, UAP, whatever you want to call it. I'm not sure exactly what nomenclature they used, but in a sense, it was a study of UFOs. And so they got $22 million to do this over 5 years, which is extremely significant. I mean, this is not something that happens every day. So that program went ahead, and they, you know, they found out certain things about certain ways that these UFOs come into the American airspace and how jets chase them and so on and so forth. And then part of the whole situation was a video released through what they call a chain of command. And it's interesting that nomenclature is used, the chain of command. That means that this video, the video that the Pentagon had about an F-18 jet chasing some sort of UFO, they went through it, what they call a chain of command, to authenticate what exactly happened with these two pilots in an F-18 monitoring and chasing this UFO. And they released a 34-second video of these pilots chasing this thing, and the video is very profound. If you have a look at it, it's pretty provocative. They see this thing, they got this infrared camera looking at the oblong shaped UFO, and it's doing all kinds of weird things in the sky. And these pilots are talking, "What do you got there, buddy?" "Oh, I've got this, I've got that, I've got, my God, what's it look like now? It's changing its vector," and all of these sort of veiled descriptions of what this UFO is all about.
Right. This is off the coast of San Diego, 2004.
Exactly. 2004, right. F-18 jets up there. They've got two pilots in an F-18 jet. And they're watching this thing doing all of these weird maneuvers. And some of them, Richard, it's like it was at 80,000 feet at one point, and all of a sudden it's at 20,000 feet in an instant. And the pilots are saying, "What is going on with this thing?" It's just an amazing flight characteristics they've never seen before. So in essence, what the program did was identify this particular video, plus others that they had in terms of, if not video, just reports of UFOs, incursions into the United States Air Force airspace, continental USA.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, "I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die."
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
How was this study group configured? Did they have just people out in the field interviewing people? Did they go through Defense Department papers? I mean, for example, would this have differed from Project Blue Book?
Oh, this was much more thorough than Project Blue Book. Luis Alessandro, the director of the program, they had reports from numerous pilots, Navy pilots, not just, United States Air Force pilots. There's a big difference between the Navy pilots and U.S. Air Force pilots, which we could get into later, but that's another story. They got reports from all of these Navy pilots of these craft, first of all, coming into the airspace, okay, and investigating the reports of these craft coming and going, and not just flying in the airspace, but going down into water, Richard. submersing themselves into water, frothing foam in the seas, developing, you know, waves and currents of salt water. And so these pilots are just, you know, they're reporting these things, and they don't know. I mean, all they're doing is reporting what they're seeing. So it's quite clear that the reports of these pilots are the foundation of what the Pentagon is reporting. And within that, this whole program had the mandate to make assessments of what these things really were and to make some sort of determination as to what the level of threat for these objects were. That's the whole key.
Right.
They just didn't want to, you know, catalog the reports and take videos or, you know, what the documents and all of that. They wanted to, in conjunction with the Defense Department in the United States, is assess the threat. That's the whole key word in that advanced aerospace threat. What is the threat to the continental United States about this unidentified aerial phenomenon situation? That's the whole key. They didn't really articulate extraterrestrial, although that's part of it. They didn't articulate, you know, what beings were on these craft. All they're interested in, is this a threat to our national security? Which is, in my way, is kind of a veiled opportunity for them to investigate this without really necessarily ascribing any kind of authenticity to the fact that these might be extraterrestrial in nature. And that I feel, is a tipping point in this whole issue.
Well, surely back in the late 60s, during the Project Blue Book study, they must have had this kind of data. They wouldn't have had, you know, video the way they do now, but they would have had these kind of reports. And yet they came obviously to a completely different conclusion that there is no threat. It was obviously considered a bit of a whitewash. So the question then is, what's changed? Why are they now treating it seriously?
Well, I think the whole idea, well, there's the multiple number of aspects to the converging lines of evidence that I call it. Number one, it's different because the Condon report back in the, I guess it was the late 50s or early 60s, said, well, there's nothing to this. And that's the conclusion they came to. You move ahead through the 60s and the 70s without any real assessment of what's really going on. And then you get blinded by this whole Bigelow, Reed, DeLong, Hal Putoff, and all the To the Stars agencies investigation of this. And you realize that the Pentagon and the inner circle of the United States government has been investigating this at a level that nobody really expected. So it's so different in the way that the information is coming forward. You've got ballistic missiles being shut down, as you know, we've talked about.
Yes.
You know, that kind of stuff happening with regularity. You know, Robert Hastings has a chronology of a dozen of these things happening. So all of it's so different from the initial reports in Blue Book, and so much more substantial, that this kind of evidence coming forward from the Pentagon, who's backed all this information with multiple numbers of videos captured by pilots, is so much more substantial than anything that Blue Book could ever even imagine bring forward. And they were trying to explain it, but they were also trying to subdue the interest among the public about what this whole UFO, ET, UFO issue was all about.
That's what I'm wondering, whether in addition to, as you say, this convergence of evidence, whether there has just been a turnover in, I don't know, let's say, for example, there is a Majestic 12, and they're charged with keeping a lid on the UFO ET reality. So then can we read into it that there has been a changeover in Majestic 12, or there's a new group in there that's pushing for disclosure, or is that reading too much into this?
No, it's not at all. Not at all. What seems to be occurring, and I've talked to Grant Cameron about this and to Stephen Bassett, two very close colleagues that we've both, you and I have interviewed, both of them feel, as do a number of other UFO researchers, Nick Pope and so on and so forth, all of these intense researchers that are into this in a lot more differential way than I am, all of them agree that there are factions within the Pentagon who want this information out, and they're in a minority. They are. But the fact of the matter is that this information has a foundational interest within the United States government. And there are people, you know, investigators, agents, and so on and so forth, who literally want this stuff to come forward because they know, first of all, it's been secretized at the highest level of governance for sure. There's no doubt about that. And the fact of the matter is that the repression of this information is in opposition to freedom of speech, into jurisprudential information as to what citizens need to find out about what their governments are doing. There's so many different aspects to why this information has to come out that the, compelling nature of this issue is taking the front seat. And this Pentagon release by Alessandro and other people is sort of a faction within the Pentagon that says, we need to get this information out, and how do we do it? And that's where I think Tom DeLonge and his group at To the Stars, that's where they're working. That's where they're kind of putting pressure on individuals within the Pentagon to say, listen, guys, you know what? We all know that this information is valid. It's authentic. But how do we put it out into the public domain so that, first of all, it can be digested by media? That's the big point. And then secondarily, understood by citizens. And I think that there's a very vacillating point between that as to how this information comes out. And this is why I think this is so important in terms of how the Pentagon really internally, there are factions there that want this information out.
And how and why was the New York Times chosen as the conduit?
Wow, that's – you know what? I don't know the direct answer to that. However, what I can say is that Leslie Kain is the pivotal fulcrum of this. Because of her her book, UFOs, government officials and so on, go forward and, you know, release this. Her book is such a definitive description of what the UFO issue is all about. I think what the New York Times did with Ralph and Cooper, they really kind of wanted someone with credibility to come forward to support the idea that the United States government was up to their ears in this whole issue. And there's nobody better to prove that fact than Leslie Kain. And the number one thing as far as I'm concerned, well, there's two things. Her assessment of the Cometa report, the Cometa, C-O-M-E, Cometa report, and also the fact that her book went to number 29 on their own, you know, bestseller list. There's nobody better than Leslie to get this thing forward. So in essence, they picked her brain to come forward and describe the authenticity of this.
Right. And Helene Cooper is the Pentagon bureau chief, I guess, at the time.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. And I mean, you've got sort of so many intensely integrated people into this whole thing, and you read it. I mean, if there's someone who knows nothing about the issue, reads that article, they have to say, what's going on here? You know, what's my government doing about this issue?
And how did it break? Did Alessandro approach Leslie Kain?
No. What he did essentially was he resigned. He said, I've had enough. You know, he said, I've had enough of the secrecy. I can quote you, you know, chapter and verse of that. But essentially what he did was, I'm resigning because there's too much pressure to repress this information, and I'm getting out of here. This is back in October of last year during the Trump administration, which I find very interesting, which we talk about later if you want. But the fact of the matter, he said, I've had enough. I'm getting out of this. I don't want to do any more of this. And then from that, he flipped over into becoming part of the Tom DeLonge initiative.
Yeah, we should mention Tom DeLonge was the front man for a popular musical group, Blink 182. He sort of put all that aside and devote his life to this UFO ET question, and has formed this group, To the Stars Academy.
Exactly. Yeah,
which also includes Hal Putoff and others.
Oh, a number of incredible individuals. And if anybody wants to look at the team, this man that Tom DeLonge has assembled within this group, it's just like, wow. It's like the A team. It's like your five starters right off the basketball court immediately. you know, with slam dunks along the way.
Right.
Now, and Hal Putov being one of them, who's incredibly authentic.
Sure. Stanford Research Institute working on the remote viewing experiments with Russell Targ and others. Now, the fact that Alessandro resigned and then went public, presumably he would have had an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. The fact that they haven't gone after him, does that suggest that they want this information to come out?
Well, I think there's a faction, as I mentioned earlier in the in our discussion. Many people, when I say many people, I'm talking about, you know, Stephen Bassett and Richard Dolan, and the people that I talk to a lot, they are convinced there are factions within the Pentagon who want this information out. So, you know, when Alessandro penned a letter to the Defense Secretary, Jim Mattis, saying and complaining of that the potential of threat was being ignored about this whole situation, he actually sent his letter of resignation, to Jim Mattis, the current Defense Secretary. And so what we've got here, Richard, is we've got someone within the Trump administration who knows that Alessandro has resigned because he's fed up with secrecy. And that is not being played out in the media. And I for some reasons I know why, and other reasons I don't know why. So why would Alessandro's letter of resignation saying to Mattis that I've had enough of the secret information about UFOs and all of this, why is that not playing out further? So there must be some sort of repressive pressures within the administration to keep this under the radar, so that Alessandro's resignation from a UFO program, you know, that channels advanced aerospace threats.
Well,
it's pretty obvious that these guys don't want the information out. That's one faction.
Well, these projects, this straddles more, you know, two administrations. So, the occupant of the White House and his administration may not even have been read into this program. So it's hard to say, you know, but I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned Stephen Bassett, and of course he had a number of initiatives, these petitions for the White House, to the White House, and one of them was sort of answered because they achieved the requisite number of signatures, and so they got a reply. I'm not sure if that was from Podesta or the science office or wherever it came from, basically saying, you know, nothing to see here, folks.
Yeah, it was the science officer. You're right. It was. Yeah, there's nothing to see here. Exactly. It's an accident that's happened, but just move along, guys, which is an absolutely inaccurate assessment of what's really going on. A total denial of the facts, of the converging lines of evidence that we see. So the overall assessment that I see in terms of the Senate, this Senator Reid and Senator Stevens, the way they got the money, that's one, you know, people say follow the money, right? The way they got the $22 million is really interesting, because it was assigned to them under a black budget operation, so that it was not something that anyone would want to acknowledge. So I guess, you know, you get that $22 million and you go forward and you incorporate Robert Bigelow into this. And then on top of that, just Robert Bigelow gets one of his buildings, one of his huge buildings, modifies the building, Richard, to house metal alloys of crashed UFOs.
Interesting.
Is right. I mean, this is what's reported. I mean, what do you make of that? Is this something that's sort of, you know, fabricated by the internet, trolls that say, well, hey, this would... No, this is absolute information that Robert Bigelow will attest to. And he was on 60 Minutes.
That's right.
CBS 60 Minutes, saying there is an absolute certainty that aliens have visited the planet. Now, take that for what it's worth, but... You know, he's entwined with all of this. Why would he make such a statement and risk his credibility in terms of his international stature with saying that there's an absolute certainty that we've been contacted by extraterrestrials? That's a pretty big statement. And then on top of that, some of these alloys that they've got housed in Bigelow's buildings Hal Pudoff said something like this. This is really kind of interesting. He said something like, it's like giving Leonardo da Vinci a garage opener, garage door opener. So da Vinci would look at the garage door, and he examined the plastic folder around it, you know, the casing of it. It's plastic. I don't know what plastic is, what's plastic, but he would not have any idea about the electromagnetic properties of that device. So we've got two levels of understanding here. We've got a device that can open doors, but it's got properties that he doesn't understand. So we're at a point in history where there's so much coming forward that we just don't understand what or why these extraterrestrial vehicles are doing what they're doing. And the Pentagon, within the Pentagon, it's like, you know, like a duck in water. You know, you've got this duck floating along in water, but it looks really calm.
Right.
But below the surface.
Exactly.
The fins are, they're paddling really, really hard. So that's what's happening here. There's so much below the surface that's going on that we really don't know about. And I think Alessandro's release of this information and I guess determination to make sure that the Pentagon's investigation about this stuff comes forward is really a determinant, as far as I'm concerned, towards a subtle or maybe not so subtle effort by the Pentagon to provide a foundation for disclosure, Richard.
Well, let me give you full disclosure on Life Extension Supplements. Your body deserves the best, but how do you choose the very best nutritional supplements or even know what's in them? Life Extension has been helping people stay healthy for over 35 years. Just like with the foods you eat, the quality, purity, and potency of the ingredients in your nutritional supplements really do matter. Life Extension supplements set the gold standard for supporting weight loss, heart, brain, bone, joint, eye, skin, sexual health, and so much more. Their formulas are based on the latest scientific research and clinically validated dosages. That's one reason why 98% of their customers recommend Life Extension to their friends and family. Every Life Extension product is backed by a total satisfaction guarantee. The bottom line? Life Extension is the brand you can trust with your health. Check out Life Extension products with special savings. Visit smartclickidea.com. That's smartclickidea.com. smartclickidea.com.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? No, me either. But I guess you better say it, because Richard, you know, he's all wrapped up in this stuff. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real. And just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Vigiani from Zealand Communications is here, and we're discussing the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. What do you make of the term threat assessment? Because we have talked about this for years on the show. You have mixed signals. We have, even coming out of Hollywood, we have E.T. is here, knights in shining armor to save us from ourselves, free energy, cures for cancer. And then we have the War of the Worlds scenario. Mm-hmm. And so this study project is called Threat Assessment. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there's two aspects to this. First of all, let's put the Hollywood stuff aside just for a second here. And that's a very good point that you raise. I think that the way the United States government, be it the Pentagon or the DIA, or the Department of Defense, however they want to frame it, they are in charge of their airspace, or they feel that they're in charge of their airspace, the airspace over the United States, and even to a point, within the entire North American theater, they feel that they have complete control over the airspace from the Arctic down to Mexico and maybe even beyond that. That's their perception of how they can control or be perceived as controlling that airspace. What's happening is that underneath that surface, they have no control of these unidentified aerial phenomenon, unknowns, uncorrelated targets, NORAD calls them tracks of interest. These things are coming and going with impunity. So the thing about that is they do not want to admit that they have no control about these craft coming and going. And I think that's a point that most people don't understand, is that the United States Air Force, they've got jets that move, the CF-18s move at 600-700 miles an hour.
Certainly, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and the people that have seen these things and reported through the through this program, these things, Richard, are moving at 96,000 miles per hour.
96,000
miles per hour in our own atmosphere.
Right.
Like, we don't know how that happens. I mean, even if a jet that we know of with the density of metal that it has, if it breaks the sound barrier, fine, that's great. But if it exceeds that, it keeps on going past that, anything that exceeds a certain number of miles per hour will disintegrate in our own atmosphere. It'll burn up. We know that with craft returning from space, it'll burn up. These craft, whatever they are, they're moving in our own atmosphere without sonic booms at up to 12,000 miles per hour. And as Commander Favor said in one of the interviews, one of the people that were viewing these things, it moved approximately 96,000 miles per hour. Now, that's what I call a head wipe. It's just like, I just don't understand that. It can't happen. But in fact, what these craft can do, so in answer to your question, why is it a threat? It's a threat because we have the United States Air Force, the United States government, and all of the intelligence agencies do not have a concept that can underlie or explain why these craft can come and go with, A, the speed that they can do and the maneuverability they can do and the hovering capacity they can do. They just don't have anything that can be comparable to that. So you've got yourself a situation where there are really no good answers within the investigative procedures to identify what these things might be a threat to.
How far back did ATIP go? Did they go back, for example, to the late 60s and Malmstrom air, these nuclear sites where we had missiles being shut down in North Dakota and elsewhere? Because, I mean, to me, that's pivotal. I'm not sure what the parameters were of ATIP, but did they go back that far?
No, they didn't. From my assessment and the reading of everything, it's been sort of something that this happened back in this. They may have done it. This is happening. What you're describing was happening back in the 60s, 65, 67. Robert Salas and I have talked a lot about that. You and I have both interviewed Robert.
Yes.
This was happening back in the 60s. I don't my information is they've really not gotten into that kind of information. It's more so the current stuff as to what the Air Force and Navy pilots are really seeing right now. They've not gone back that far. If they did, which they may have, but they're not releasing to us, the other intelligence agencies might have gone into it. But what this current program did was investigate things more currently. And I think that that is kind of an update as to where this whole UFO ET issue might reside. And I think we're lucky because they really haven't depended on this, that historical information that that you and I have, you know, interviewed many people about. And that's the one thing that I think is really important in this. This is current information. It's not historical. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love documents that go back to 1952 to talk about what the Canadian or Yugoslavian government know about UFOs. That's great stuff. But now we have much more current information as to how the United States government is considering this information as a current threat. Now, that's their interpretation of it. I mean, my interpretation is that this is not a threat. It's just an incursion of other craft from wherever to observe what's going on our planet. I know we can get into that discussion later on, but the United States government has this propensity to look at everything that they don't know about as a threat.
Right.
That's the nature of the United States government. It's just, we see it now in the current administration and even in previous administrations. Everything that they don't understand, they consider a threat.
Sure. But,
you know, I mean, that's the nature of governance these
well,
days.
That's how national security operates. You have to assume that. You have to.
Yeah.
So after scouring these reports, anything in there that hints at propulsion systems, free energy, anti-gravitics?
Yeah. Well, the description of if I can pull it up here, I'm looking at the description of Commander Flavor. He was a very pivotal individual. He's an Air Force pilot.
This is part of the USS Nimitz Strike Group off
exactly
of San Diego.
Right.
Yeah,
and what they describe is, as I mentioned earlier, is these craft moving up and down, left and right, at incredible speeds. Hal Putoff, one of the people who's integrally involved with Tom DeLonge's initiative, I respect this man so much. He is a very dedicated, unbiased provocateur of this whole idea of quantum physics with respect to what this energy source might be that these propulsion systems or these UFOs or UAP use. And he has made it very, very clear, Richard, that whatever the propulsion system is, it's demonstrated by a number of their flight characteristics. They can move up and down, blink out, go left and right, rotate, move at speeds that are absolutely blinding with their own, with respect to our own capabilities. You know, like I mentioned earlier, 96,000 miles. How do you do that within our own atmosphere without burning up? So what he's proposing is that this energy source, whatever it might be, represents a leap of understanding about the quantum level of physics in the cosmos. And his understanding of it is, and we're talking about a physicist who really kind of knows what he's talking about, what he proposes is, and he's not the only one either, is that whatever this free energy is in the cosmos, whatever it is, this connectivity, this quantum vacuum, this interconnectivity is something that these UFOs or these extraterrestrial races have mastered, that if this free energy could be quantified and put it in a cup, one cup of this energy can boil all of the oceans of the world.
That's what kind of energy we're talking about.
That's
potential
the kind of
energy.
I mean, that is an absolutely bizarre paradigm shift of any understanding that you and I would have of how you fill up your car with gas and it lasts you 400 kilometers. This stuff is whatever it might be. And as a result of Hal Putoff's and other people's, Tom Violette, there's a whole lot of people who've investigated this anti-gravitic stuff.
Yes.
Whatever this quantum energy is can propel systems extraterrestrial, or even ours, to a point where we can travel at or beyond the speed of light without any kind of transference of physical energy whatsoever. And that is something that I think the human race and politicians and governments have to digest in order to understand what the extraterrestrial issue is all about.
Right.
This may be a paradigm shift that we're never going to be able to get our minds around. So, I mean, once you move beyond UFOs and what it really means, I think your question about what the propulsion systems are is the key issue as
right.
to what this is all about.
Do we know how much debris Bigelow has in these hangars? And has he said anything else about it? And is he going to let us see it?
I don't. You ask a question that when I was reading this afternoon, Richard, and I looked at the fact that he has sort of modified his buildings to house this stuff. My answer to that is I don't know. I really don't know. But the fact of the matter is that if this man has this stuff, these alloys, whatever these alloys are, and people always ask, is there proof about, do they leave ashtrays behind and all that kind of stuff? If Bigelow has this stuff in a storage room someplace, these alloys have to be analyzed in the most unbiased format possible to say this stuff doesn't exist here on the planet. And once that happens, that could be the next step. And if Bigelow if he wants to move beyond 60 minutes, he has to open the doors to those modified buildings, which he says he has. And Alessandro has said that. He's got this stuff in these storage facilities. That could be the next step in understanding what these alloys might be, what they represent, and how they kind of figure into how these craft do what they do.
Well, I'd like to know where this debris came from. Does this mean that there have been recent UFO retrieval operations and recent crashes of unidentified aerial phenomena?
Well, from what I understand, and this goes back to Stephen Greer's investigation with several military and intelligence agencies' witnesses, this has gone back a long way with craft crashes and how the United States government has kind of gone in and swooped up the debris from certain crashes, going back to 1947 with Roswell and so on. There's been a number of crashes. And where they've got this stuff, who knows? But if Bigelow has this stuff, that's a different story altogether. And that could be the next physical, like the most proficient way that we could describe what somebody has in their back pocket about this. Not the United States government, but a guy named Robert Bigelow. And if he wants to come through and have people assess, analyze, investigate what these alloys are, then that could be the next echelon of disclosure as to how the Pentagon says, okay, we've got the goods here, but we're going further. We can say to you that the alloys that we have don't represent anything that we have here on this planet.
Last question.
So, go ahead.
New York Times, this broke in, mid-December, December 16th or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, we're almost 3 months in. Where's the New York Times? Why don't they have a regular a section? I mean, we're looking at failed business models in print journalism everywhere. This could be their saving grace.
Mm-hmm. You know what? That question plagues me all of the time. Why does a nationally respected journalistic enterprise like the New York Times float this out at one point, with Leslie Kahn and Blumenthal and Cooper? Why do they float the balloon and then the balloon just sort of slowly descends and just sort of goes into anonymity? It just sort of goes nowhere. And that's the nature of this issue. And if there is a factor within the New York Times or even the Washington Post that can resurrect these kinds of issues and maintain the authenticity of this issue, then we can have something. And I've always been, and you and I have talked about this many times before, the only way around this issue is media consistency. The media has to pick up this issue like they did with Watergate. you know, and keep on going with it to a point where they nail down the perpetrators and say, here's what's happening. And then on top of that, what happens is the general public buys into the fact that, you know, President Nixon was a criminal, you know, and you go forward with that. They had a tough time buying the fact that Haldeman and Ehrlichman and John Dean were complicit. They had a very difficult time in understanding that. But when the information was presented to them, everyone agreed that these guys were criminals and they did something against the Constitution and they were all kind of turfed out. It's the same thing with this. Once the authenticity of this issue becomes news like anything else, you know, that we contemplate, it has to become regular news, Richard. It's not just, you know, peripheral kind of musings about what these UFOs are. It has to become mainstream news to a point where everybody is consumed by it. Much like if you watch MSNBC today, all they report about is what Donald Trump is all about. And it's just, you know, however they report, people are consumed by this information. And they listen to the tweets. They listen to Fox News. The UFO issue has to become that kind of resurrection of intellectual consideration and media consideration. Once this issue rises to that level, then I think we can kind of guarantee that with the evidence that we can provide, this issue can retain itself as a maintained, substantial, identifiable and authentic issue within the mainstream media. Until that happens, it'll always be like a substructure of conspiracy, you know, yes or no, maybe this is that. You have to really understand that if it floats to that level of authenticity, then it'll be considered. If it doesn't, it'll never reach the population to a point where people really consider it.
You're right. Once it does, there's no looking back, and things will never be the same.
Exactly. It's like, you know what I say? It's often tough to understand, Richard, that it's hard to tell when they're loosening the screws or tightening them.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You can go one way or another with this. This can either be the most provocative issue of our time or it'll just fade away as a nothing. And I think you know which side of the coin I'm on.
Yes.
But that's the way that this issue can be kind of proffered or at least presented to the American public and to the world.
Right.
And I think, yeah.
In the meantime, we wait.
Yeah, we've done this for so long and – it's a very difficult issue to, you know, it's like, you know, you swim in water and you can do the breaststroke and you do the crawl and in regular water and you really kind of propel yourself forward, or you can swim in a vat of honey and just sort of just.
No, but you can tell this time is different. Things are changing.
It seems to be that way.
We're on the cusp of something or nothing, and only time will tell.
Yep, for sure.
Victor, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Richard. Thank you very much.
And tell us about Zealand Communications. How do we read your blogs?
Well, just Google Zealand Communications. That's all you have to do is put Zland Communications into your search browser, and you'll come up with our website. And we've come up with some pretty provocative things over the last couple of days that I've put forward. And you'll be able to read all the stuff, both on this issue and a lot of other stuff. So we thank you very much for your support, Richard, and it's just great to be with you.
You too. Thanks, pal. Before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'm going to fill you in on what's in store for episode 41 of Conspiracy Unlimited. Before that, we have our weekly draw for my Strange Planet CD, and I'll reach into the enormous cheese puffs jar and pull out a name in just a minute. I have to tell you, I didn't eat any of the cheese puffs in that jar. My twin boys took care of that, but they don't have to worry about their weight. I do. And it's a constant struggle. And now I understand why it's so hard. It's about changing behavior, not just changing the food you eat or your exercise routine. Unfortunately, the commitment to weight loss often fades. Most people simply give up in the first 90 days. So the key is having the right mindset.
Getting thin and staying that way lies in our thought processes, and hypnotherapy can make all the difference. Now, clinical hypnotherapist Dr. Steve G. Jones has created a set of 5 audio hypnotic sessions that apply the power of hypnosis to reprogram the mind and replace bad habits with vibrant, positive new habits and help you achieve natural and long-lasting weight loss. Weight loss hypnotherapy really works, and it's available now at a special discount. Isn't it time to lose those extra pounds? Check out weight loss hypnotherapy right now at smartclicksavings.com. That's smartclicksavings.com. All right, here we go. All right, pull one out. And we have Dimitri Poulos in Chicago, Illinois. Congratulations, Dimitri. I'll drop your CD in the post straight away. Incidentally, if you want to get in on the weekly draw, it's real simple. Just rate and review this podcast. Grab a screenshot, email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. And don't forget to include your name and mailing address. And then your name will go into the weekly draw. Every Friday, another winner. Good luck. Coming up on episode 41 of Conspiracy Unlimited, The Secrets of Gravity. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.